Hello, and welcome to In the Kitchen with Brett Thorne, a food service industry podcast by Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality, at least for now. I'm your host, Senior Food and Beverage Editor Brett Thorne, and maybe you're wondering, Brett, what do you mean, at least for now? Well, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere, but this podcast and its affiliations are going to change a little bit. I don't know if you pay a lot of attention to food service trade publishing. If you don't, you might not know that last year my parent company, Informa, bought the parent company, Winsight, of our main competitor, Restaurant Business. It's a pretty big deal, like the Berlin Wall coming down, except in the much, much, much smaller, more narrow universe of food service trade publishing. At any rate, Nation's Restaurant News, Restaurant Business, and Restaurant Hospitality are all staying intact, although some of our other publications have merged, and we're consolidating our podcast offerings. So the one you're listening to now, which I remind you is In the Kitchen with Brett Thorne, is merging with Restaurant Business's bi-weekly food podcast, Menu Feed, hosted by my friend and now colleague, Pat Kobe. Pat and I have known each other literally for decades, and we've always been on good terms, even though technically until last year, we were enemies. Now that we're colleagues, we are going to be hosting our podcasts together. This is going to be fun, and if we do it right, it will be more engaging for you too. We haven't landed on a name for the new joint podcast yet, so if you have any ideas, let me know. You can email me at brett.thorne@informa.com or just find me on social media. I'm easy to find. No problem. At any rate, my guest this week is Alex Curley, Chief Operating Officer of Palacios Murphy, a multi-unit restaurant group that started out with a single high-end Tex-Mex restaurant in Houston. Curley has helped to expand the group into a robust and growing mini restaurant empire. And if you'd like to do that with your restaurant, he has some good advice. So I'll let him get right to it. Please enjoy my conversation with Alex Curley. So how you doing, Alex Curley?
Let me tell you something, Brett. If I was any better, I'd be selling tickets. And I'll tell you what. Yeah, it's been a busy past couple months, you know. We just got Manditos and Katy, which is our most recent opening, done under our belt. And to be quite honest with you, I've been kind of tied to that project out there for the past month or so. And this is probably one of the only times I've been down back in the office. So, you know, you get used to being in the field, and I'm eager to get back into the trenches there. So.
And you're in Houston, right?
Yeah. Our office is in River Oaks. So we've got Armando's here in Houston, and we've got Lulu's, which basically are right below me, right below our office in River Oaks. And then we've got Manditos in Bel Air. And so generally, I spend a good amount of my time here, maybe 1 or 2 days in the field. But if anything is going on significant, like this is an opening, or next week we have the huge antique festival, which lasts 3 weeks in Round Top, you know, I'll be out there in the field with the troops.
And you are the Chief Operating Officer of Palacios Murphy, right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Why don't you you kind of just did, but why don't you once again tell our audience about what exactly Palacios Murphy is? Actually, you haven't mentioned Armando's, so.
Sure, no problem. So Palacios Murphy is a hospitality and restaurant group. It started with Armando's about 43 years ago, and it stayed in that small state for decades. And, you know, as anybody knows nowadays, getting 5 to 10 years in a restaurant is significant, but 43 years is unconscionable, the amount of brands that we've seen come and go in that time. And, you know, the original owners, you know, did a couple of small projects in Round Top, a Lulu's and a Poppy Burger and a Manditos, but it was really out of COVID. And I think this drive and desire they had to use what was a challenging event and turn it into a positive experience for their staff and guests led them to start looking outward at how to do that. You know, they had the drive and they had the passion, but they weren't quite sure the nuts and the bolts. How do you do that? How do you build a restaurant group out of a mom and pop, you know, shop in the middle of a pandemic? And we wound up crossing paths there where they opened up a newspaper or a book and they said, let's call these people. And it was, Elliott, so a recruiting firm, and just a good friend of mine who worked for them called me and said, listen, would you like to talk to these people? I'm not really sure what they want. I don't know if they know what they want. But I think it would be an interesting conversation. And we spoke and just really we had the same views on hospitality, on the pandemic, we shared this really deep-rooted conviction to, take care of our guests and take care of our staff despite all during that time. And we really hit it off. And I think that was really when the soul of Palacios Murphy, which is now this growth brand, occurred. And since then, during the pandemic, we opened a hotel, we opened a bar and lounge, we opened a restaurant, an Italian restaurant here in Houston, and we opened Mantitos in Bel Air, and we just kind of kept going and just did Katy, and that's how this kind of flower has bloomed per se.
And if I remember correctly, that hotel is in Round Top, right?
It is, yep. It's in Round Top. It is in Round Top, Texas, a town of 90. Yep, a
That
beautiful
90.
property there. It's unbelievable. And what is so remarkable about it, and what I love about it is, this is a town of 90 that for 300 days out of the year, a restaurant might be doing, $30,000 a week. But for 3 weeks, you'll have a restaurant doing $260,000 a week. And that is no joke. And just what it takes in order to do that is really, really remarkable. And I think it's really fun for our teams. And we actually look forward to it each year. And we're getting ready to go into one of those festivals just next week coming up. There's three a year.
I just looked up Round Top on Google Maps, and it is midway between Houston and Austin, right?
Yes, and it looks like something out of the Shawshank Redemption. I mean, for people like me that have grown up, I grew up in DC and operated in LA and Philly and New York and Chicago and, all these big cities. To come out and to drive out there, and see this town of 90, the natural beauty of it is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, we're next to a farm and there's llamas and there's bobcats in the street and just these old, 1,000-year-old oak trees. And it is just phenomenal. It's stunning. And, most of the guests that frequent the restaurants and the shops in Round Top don't live in Round Top. Most of them live in the farms and the ranches that surround it. Or there are people that are traveling originally from San Antonio, from Dallas, and from places in Texas, but now we're starting to see the New York and the Chicago and the LA and people really coming from all over the world to descend on this little, what I call an oasis, nestled in the middle of the farmland.
Well, and I would hope that most of your customers aren't from Round Top because there's only so much income you can get from 90 people.
That is 100% true. And I think what makes it really fun is that a lot of the guests that travel there, they don't expect to be able to get, a world-class experience in a town of 90. I think they're walking into these restaurants just thinking, okay, there's limited resources here, there's limited staffing, and here we're going to say they don't expect to walk in there and get, an executive chef that worked for Fabio Trabocchi in DC, or get, a polished wait staff of 20. Or to get an interior that's been, designed with a lot of really deliverance. And so it's really neat because we believe we do a good job there of just exceeding the expectations of the guests that walk in. And that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be there for people that have traveled so far and put so much effort into to getting there and to have them walk in and then walk out thrilled. If that doesn't get you excited in hospitality, I don't know what does.
So how do you manage when you have like some very, very busy festivals when you're packed, and then the rest of the time, maybe tumbleweeds go rolling through
Yeah.
the dining room?
Understood.
Yeah.
So the way that we attacked Round Top, and that you're absolutely right, it is an immense challenge. But I think it's one that isn't unique to Round Top. I think it is one that exists in any challenging environment around the country, whether you work at a resort, whether you work at a beach. I used to work for Richard Sandoval Restaurants, and we had Vanga Vanga and Snowmass, and we'd be doing a lot of zeros, half of the year, and then during summer it's crickets and we close. So the way that we did it in Round Top is I brought people from other cities around the country. from places that I had worked. I brought people from DC, people from Atlanta, some people from Florida, and I made calls and said, we have an opportunity here to do something really special. I know you all are super, super talented individuals. You have the ability to come out here and really change the game and change people's lives. It's a beautiful area, and you know, I need your help. And together, I think we can do something cool, create experiences that are not only remarkable for our guests, but we can all benefit from that, and we can all grow together. And literally, that's how it began. And we'd get one person, you know, a chef from DC that I worked with at Sandoval said, yeah, I'll come out for a couple of months. Came out for a couple of months, fell in love with it, bought a home and stayed. You know, I called a bartender that I used to work with on 14th Street in DC, came out, just bought a house. And so a lot of the people that came out, and this was coming out of COVID really, they enjoyed it. It was very fulfilling. And we were able to build our team that way. And I think that strategy applies to any restaurant, anywhere in the world. If you've been in this industry long enough and you have people that trust you and they trust in your vision, they think similarly and they have similar views on hospitality, I think being able to pick up the phone and get them somewhere, even if it doesn't align with everything that they typically look for, I think is incredibly important in order to address the challenges of staffing and retention and all that other buzzwords that get thrown at us in hospitality.
How did they even find a place to live? I mean, the town has 90 people. They have
a lot of housing stock. Like, what? Yeah, so you have to think outside the box. I mean, in any of these situations, you have to think outside the box. And the way that we first did it was we had some rental properties out there, and I would house them in the rental properties. You know, we had facilities on the hotel grounds where people could stay. And that was just to get people out for the first time. But once they started working and once they got a feel, you know, Texas, it's remarkable. You know, a lot of people that, you know, come from a lot of big cities around the country have a view of Texas, but it's a very, very nice quality of life when you're moving from the hustle and bustle of some of these cities. And some people really enjoy it and they enjoy the pace. And then they would transition and take a couple of trips home and then make a decision to either purchase or rent property here. And there is probably in this company right now, at least I would say 30 people that came from other states or other companies as part of kind of that growth model. And what happens is that then they bring people, and now it's not me making the calls, it's them making the calls. And that chain reaction kind of goes on and on. Most people live about 15 or 20 minutes outside of town, generally in LaGrange or Brenham or some of the other towns around. And when I worked for Sandoval with Aspen, we had a similar challenge there. Most people didn't live in Aspen, you know, but we got creative there too. We would tell people if they worked for the season, we'd buy them lift tickets. And so people would snowboard all morning or ski, and then they'd go there. I just think the standard quo cannot work in order to be successful in these challenging, unusual markets.
Well, yeah, in Aspen, nobody can afford to live, but I, you know, right. And even I understand the communities like in the Roaring Fork Valley have also gotten pretty pricey. So
it's brutal. And you just, that's a challenge as well. And so we just had to go after people and say, you know, what is your motivation for wanting to work here? And a lot of the people that worked there, they would work there in the winter and then they'd go surf in California in the summer. I mean, it was really like Point Break style. And I said, okay, that's why you guys are here, huh? Got it. Okay, well, how about we do this? And people fell in love with it and they told their friends, hey, and so they'd get five or six people, they'd bunk in a house, you know, 45 minutes out, they'd come snowboard and ski all morning, go home, and they'd do that kind of in these shifts. And it's seasonal work. I mean, during the summer we'd close and during the fall we'd close for a couple of months. And I just think that every challenging staffing situation, it has a solution. It really, really does. But I just think operators have to get a little bit uncomfortable. They have to think outside the box, and you have to have built a core talent group that will follow you. Otherwise, you know, good luck picking up the phone. Hey, you want to come to a town of 90? Where? Round Top? What is that? You know, no way. I'm happy in you know, working in, you know, Newbury Street in Boston.
Well, what does your staff do when it's not a festival? I mean, is it also seasonal for them? Do they go find a job in Austin or Houston or whatever?
Good. So the good news is that this town started with being super, super festival driven. The good news is that what we did is most of the restaurants would only open for the festival. They'd only open during the busy days. And we invested a lot of time, a lot of energy in staying open 7 days a week. So we're open now 7 days a week. And in the beginning, it was really challenging. We had to bring people from Houston up there and bring staff back and forth. But eventually, we were able to build a staff of people that lived in the media area, and we were able to open every day during the week. And what that helped do for the town is it helped it be a destination. So then some retail places started to be opening. It started a chain reaction. So it's not as dramatic as it was before. However, to your point, is the way that we do it is we have a core team that works there now. And then during the festival, we bring people from our other restaurants. Before, we used to bring people from out of town. I had three bartenders that used to fly in from Atlanta, and I'd call them and be like, "Hey, it's showtime." And they're like, "Okay, let's go, guys." And they get a hotel room and, make their money. But now that we've opened enough restaurants in Houston, a lot of the staff really enjoy it. It's a different experience. It's a lot of fun. Quite honestly, they make a lot of money. You meet a lot of fun people. And so right now, as we go, we'll have people from Armando's that are going to prep. We'll have servers coming from Lulu's. We've got bartenders coming from Mandito's, and we all kind of come together, which makes it fun. I mean, I work the door. I'll be up there at the host stand, shaking people's hands, messing around on talk. Everybody gets involved. Cinda Palacios, our owner, will be bussing tables, and it's for, like I said, for us, that's kind of what it's all about. Everybody getting together and making the impossible happen in order to make a guest happy.
So, how in terms of profitability, do you is the restaurant more of an amenity for the community, or can you actually turn a profit when it's not the season?
You can turn a profit, and I think there's a couple of reasons why. Number one is it's extremely unique. It's very hard to be able to, shave truffles over pasta or serve caviar, as you know, from Lulu's in a town of 90 in the middle of nowhere, 3 hours from the closest, OpCo. That's a challenge, and I think because of that, you become a destination. And to be quite honest, at a lot of these, around these busy times, people are willing and able and eager to pay, good prices on hotels and on food. When people are flying from New Zealand for a week, shopping for, golden horses for their patio, they really honestly don't mind. And we're not trying to price gouge or destroy that. That's not the But the demand is such, and the supply is so limited, that we are able to operate profitably. And during the off season, obviously, when there's not a shows, it's you're watching labor, and our chefs are cooking on the line, and you have managers working the door, and you're purchasing on a declining budget. You're not getting careless, because if you have a down week, it could be painful. So we watch our costs and our labor and all the typical metrics during the year. We try not to cut, any core staffing, servers, bartenders. We don't cut quality. We don't, cut portions or anything like that, but just to try to maintain the experience throughout the year. And it does. It winds up being profitable for us.
And this
We
is.
actually just recently bought additional property to extend the hotel out to a block behind it. So.
And so the hotel, the restaurant is Mandito's, right?
Yeah, so we have Hotel Lulu, which is in Round Top, and inside that hotel is the restaurant Lulu's, and we have a bar and lounge there called Il Cucolo. In that same area, basically the center of town there, we also have a Manditos and we also have a Poppy Burger. Literally, we're on like the three corners of the main intersection in town. So we've got the kind of central area there, which is really neat. I mean, you want Mexican, you can get Mexican. You want a good Italian meal, you got it. And you want a burger and a beer, we've got that. We've got that for you too.
So wherever people in Round Top are eating, they're eating with Palacios Murphy, whether they know it or
A
not.
lot of times, and what has really happened over the past 3 years that I've been here is people have seen that. And they have wanted to open restaurants. I mean, it looks fun, right? It's busy and, wow, people are making money and, everybody goes home and they're like, let's do that. Those guys are rocking. And so we've had a lot of restaurants open there, and we've unfortunately seen a lot of restaurants close as well, or restaurants that have struggled when that hit comes on a Friday, ran out of food, or had to close, or run out of staff, or are only able to get open 2 or 3 days a week. So I've seen probably 7 or 8 F&B places in the past 3 years open, and probably about half of that either transition close or shift into kind of a really limited operational schedule, which I don't wish on everybody. That's not fun. I always say that running restaurants is a lot like skiing. It looks so easy when you see it. People are just on these things and they're just going down the hill. But then you put skis on and you're like, I turn, it doesn't work. What I'm trying to do is supposed to work. And I think restaurants are a lot like that. It can look really easy and cool and fun, but man, behind the scenes, it took decades to get to a point to make it look like that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, 20 years ago, food and the restaurant world was not at the center of American culture. Now it is. Now, everywhere you go, people tell you running restaurants is really hard. Food is like this. And they, you know, you learn all this stuff and you still have so many people who are like, I go to restaurants all the time. I can do this. And they can't because it's really hard.
Yes. Yes. And it takes so much. And I tell people this all the time. I said, if you really didn't love this, I mean, really love it, I can't think of anything that would make you more miserable. You know, I mean, not seeing family and working nights and coming home smelling like beer and getting calls because lights don't work and, you know, slips and falls and all this. But we truly love it. I mean, I couldn't do anything else. But I think a lot of people, it looks cool, but they don't have that passion for it. And if you don't love it, generally you're not going to be very good at it. I really believe that if the guests nowadays can tell, they can tell the motivation for you doing what you're doing. And I think if you really aren't passionate about it, I think the guests can tell, and the experience reflects that. But it's not unique. There's a lot of other fields out there that are probably most likely the same way, where it really requires somebody to be passionate about it in order to be successful and get the customer, or for us, the guest, to a respectable experience.
So you're an industry veteran, I think it's fair to say. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your background? You've been all over the
Yes.
place. You've done many things.
So yeah, I grew up overseas. My father was State Department, so I was born and raised overseas. We lived everywhere. I moved every 2 to 4 years. I was born in Greece. We lived in Africa and 4 different countries. I was in Australia, just all over, and moved to the States to go to college, like a lot of Foreign Service brats. We all wind up in D.C. because it's like the only place we call home. It's the only place we know. Somebody asked me on a map when I graduated from high school, where do you want to go? I had no idea. I was like, I'll go to D.C. I used to go there to get shots and vaccinations and my visa stamped. And I was in a freshman in college, very, very young. I started school very young because I went to school overseas. I was 16, I think, at the time. And there was a Pizza Hut that was close to my house. And I wanted a job. And I walked in there. And, it was $4.25 an hour answering the phone. And I studied psych in school. I went to school to be a therapist. And I had no intention at all of working in a restaurant. I just wanted to make some money. I was a kid, 16. And some people say that what the love affair for me was, some people say it's because of how I grew up. I was so used to constantly changing environments and always on the mood in different cultures and different interactions. And so I really began to fall in love with that in the industry. Every day it's different. I can talk to a lot of people. I can meet new people. And I can shape the way people think and feel based on how, I perform. And so from there, it literally was like, okay, phone answerer to cook to shift manager to assistant manager to general manager to area director to regional director, literally like everything, to VP, to regional VP, to VP, to EVP, to CEO, and I'm not a huge title guy, but it literally was that. And I think when you talk about, industry professionals or people, there's different ones out there. There's ones that have done it all and ones that haven't. But that approach, it really, really helped me, because I could tell somebody how to unclog a drain, but I could also tell them if they qualify for FLSA. I can read construction drawings, but I can tell you what an HVAC unit should be set on so that it doesn't freeze. I can tell you good non-slip shoes to buy, but I could also explain how to put together, you know, a soda gun system. So I just think when you've gone through it in the trenches, it's a lot of fun because you're just exposed to so many aspects of the industry. And I think that's what makes so many of today's operators that started, you know, at the bottom, I should say, very, very well-rounded. And I also, during that time, I did work for a lot of different styles of concepts. Earlier on in my career, it was really focused on corporate. I did like California Pizza Kitchen, Pizzeria Uno, Cheesecake, you know, when really those groups I thought were driving this industry. It was Bennigan's, it was Fridays. I mean, that was it. The stuff that we were doing in Cheesecake back in the day is just crazy. And then I started transitioning more into these boutique-y, I guess, groups like Richard Sandoval Restaurants and Barcelona Wine Bar and Southern Proper, where there was a little bit more of a mix between, okay, we're operators and we're going to operate at a really high, meticulous level, but there's also a soul to us. And if you don't do a dessert presentation this way, you're not going to get fired. And I normally found that that was the realm that I was most comfortable in. And here at Palacios Murphy, I think that's where we would classify ourselves. And I don't think there's anything wrong with any of them. There's a million ways to be successful at this game. It's just, where are you going to be the best version of yourself and the guest's going to get the best experience?
Well, and Armando's the grandfather, the flagship of the organization, is interesting in that it's, at least the one time I ate there when I joined you for brunch, it's a fine dining Mexican restaurant, or really a Tex-Mex restaurant, right?
That is right. It is like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, there's a couple of concepts that during my time I could say made an effort to do that. But it's white tablecloth, enchiladas, and fajitas. And one of the things that I've learned being in Texas, and I've only been down here for 3 years, is, you know, Tex-Mex is, it's a culture and it's a way of life. It's Christmas dinner, you're eating Tex-Mex, and you just got promoted, you're eating Tex-Mex. You're graduating, you're eating Tex-Mex, you know, and a lot of people call it Mexican here, which Mexican before I moved here was Richard Sandoval Restaurants, you know. But it's a fine dining experience. You put on your suit and you come in and, you know, we've got now, you know, servers in white coats and bow ties. And it's super unique because you have that oxymoron of what we're eating, enchiladas and fajitas. But here we are in this beautiful environment. And I think the uniqueness of it is what makes the experience so powerful. And the food quality there, it is, I'm not saying this because I work here. I mean, I would be totally honest and upfront. It's the best version of Tex-Mex for me. Is there Tex-Mex you could say tastes better or worse? Maybe, but it's like a dog show. It might, you know, the dog wins. That's the best version of the breed. And I really think that for me, Armando's is the best version of Tex-Mex that exists, and I can't get enough of it. And like I said, that's not a plug. I'm legit. Yeah, and people crave it. I mean, people come back from their trips from Dubai, and they're like, I need my beans, you know? In the same way somebody would come back to Boston and say, I want my lobster roll, or Chicago and their pizza.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the perception of Tex-Mex, which is changing, but, like, it was originally, or, you know, say 20 years ago, thought of as sort of inauthentic, like, you know, some sort of bastardization of Mexican cuisine. But it's Mexican cuisine developed by Mexicans, but mostly north of the border or on either side of the Rio Grande. It's a legitimate cuisine. It's just
100%. And one of the first things that I noticed when I moved to Texas is there's a complete integration between Mexican and American culture here. It's not like, oh, there's people over here and people over there. No, this is a really, really intertwined culture. And that's when, you know, my view of Tex-Mex changed, was this food is a representation of that unique combination of cultures. I agree with you 100%. This isn't something stumbled upon. It's not, and maybe it was once upon the time, but I agree with you. It's a legitimate culture and a legitimate cuisine. And that's, I think, one of the things that I really appreciated about coming here and working with it, was thinking, you know, they've been making this cuisine, this authentic cuisine, for 43 years, you know, in the heart of this. I mean, they were probably one of the first people doing fajitas, one of the first, I'm not saying the first, or doing those beans in that way. And it's just, there's a sense of pride of being part of that, you know, and it changed my view of the cuisine. It changed my view of the culture. And I'm super excited to be a part of the organization that does that. And Manditos, what we did is we took that, the soul of that food and the flavor profiles and the prep recipes, and we just put it in a model that was a little bit more approachable, a little bit more for quote unquote the masses, so to be, because Armando's is fine dining and not everybody is going to want to go in and have somebody in a tuxedo when they come back from a swim meet, or you know, have the kids in tow or just came back from the gym. It can be a little intimidating, and that's been a lot of fun to carry the food quality and the flavors and be able to deliver that to additional demographics that wouldn't walk through the doors of Armando's on a regular basis.
So I'm curious about the conversation you had with the Armando's people when they headhunted you. Like, what? Because I think there are a lot of restaurant operators like the Palacios of Armando's that might be interested in, you know, getting some professional help. So, and they might be listening to this podcast. So what kind of conversations did you have to have with them to kind of corporatize or bring a sort of structure that's necessary for growth?
Understood. And so I think the first thing that I always go back to is, you know, anybody, there's a lot of people out there that can do this. A lot of people can come in and figure out operations and, you know, figure out the back end and put the tools in place and hire staff. But for me, it goes back to the core of what I think is the core of hospitality, and that's the motivation. Why are we really doing this? And I've always felt that that's the difference between service and hospitality. You know, with our motivation for doing this is genuinely, I'm happy when a guest is happy. I'm not doing it for a star on the wall. I'm not doing it for a Yelp review. I'm not doing it for a Google review or bonus or distribution. I'm doing it because literally, like, I'm excited that that person walked out the door and they're like, this is cool. And so for me, that superseded a lot. Our motivations were on exactly the same level, you know, and I talked to a lot of groups that were bigger, that were more established, that would pay more, that, you know, had the shiny positions and the titles and the PR behind it and all that. But what ultimately I valued was that I valued that our motivations were the same and that we saw eye to eye on people, on culture, on product, and on guests. And I think from there, the rest of everything can figure itself out, so to speak. And I know that sounds weird. After 30 years in the industry, you'd be like, oh no, it's all these things that I know how to do, and I can write a budget, and I can, you know, open restaurants, and you know, I can do a critical path. But the core for me was that we connected on that level to start. It does take somebody who is an individual that is willing and able to make the sacrifice necessary. And it also takes somebody who can recognize that a legacy is important, that 43 years of operating is important, and that you can't just come in and be like, hey, I'm a hotshot operator. I've worked in, you know, $50 million a year regions, and we're going to change the plate at Armando's, because the guests do not want that. And I think being able to have a mutual respect for what has been established, and you know, the comfort of letting them know, you know, our goal here isn't to change this. Our goal is to take this magic that exists here and get it in front of more people, whether it's guests or whether it's employees. And then, you know, in order to build that trust, they have to have a legitimate belief that you can do what it is that has to be done in order to get there. And in some cases, owners don't even know what that is. And so it's sitting down and aligning on a vision and then saying, look, this is how I think we can do this thing. And this is why, and this is what we've been able to do in the past. I will say that anybody out there that's looking for somebody to come in and do that, the number one thing I would look at is, in addition to all this, is do they have people that follow them? Do they have a core group of talent that and a history of growing this talent and that talent working with them? Because in a lot of these smaller groups, people are coming not for the group, they're coming for the person a lot to get started until they learn the group. And so a lot of the people that are here, we started working with, not in the Pizza Hut days, but when they were managers and now they're, you know, VPs, and when they were line cooks and now they're chefs. And generally, if somebody has that experience in the field, they're going to be able to do the same thing for your organization, and they'll bring people for the right reasons, not some spiel like, hey, these guys are suffering, but come with me because I'm cool and we'll tell them. No, this is a magical thing they've created here. Nobody's ever done this before, and we want to win for them and you know, form better opportunities for them and for ourselves and our families and the guests in the process.
That makes sense. And I think it's true that people need to have a passion to work in the industry well, and there are a lot of easier ways to make money. I mean, you don't go into industry for like easy hours or fast money, and if you're looking for titles, like, go get an accounting degree or something.
I literally, like I said, in my former life, would I go work the door in a restaurant on a Friday night? You know, probably not. I had a lot of people under me, and I sat in an office and did this and that, but ultimately, that wasn't my choice. You know, you get pushed into that I would rather be running around a restaurant any day of the week. But slowly somebody somewhere believes that you can, you know, have a bigger impact on the guest experience sitting in the office, but it's not willing. It's chosen for you. So, you know, to your point, you have to be willing and able, especially with a smaller group, to want to be able to do that. And that's where you comes to light that there are a lot of people in the field that have a lot of letters in their titles that haven't done that or aren't able to do that. And I would encourage anybody who, once again, is looking to bring somebody on board and looking to make that jump and grow, is this somebody who is wearing non-slip shoes and will go into your kitchen right now and expo in the dish table? Is that something that they would, or are they going to shy away from it? Because if they're going to shy away from it, it's probably not the right fit.
This is good advice. And I think a great point for us to wrap up, because we're about out of time anyway. And I want to thank you very much, Alex Curley, for taking the time to hang out with me.